For 6 years, I worked with Al Provincial in the Chicago province, in Oak Park. There's a reverse to these particular friendships. You might call it particular animosities. I think the subject deserves that. I think this is so practically important. Let me share a few thoughts on that with you. Over the years, and this goes back to the earliest years of the Society of Jesus, so what I'm drawing on is not just my own limited experience. Just as we have to watch certain people towards whom we are naturally drawn, where the watchword is sacrifice in all of its manifestations. So there are certain people towards whom we have natural antipathy, what you might call there are natural incompatibility. Or plural, natural incompatibilities. Some of this we can gradually master and overcome, but some of it may remain so ingrained that even though for a while these, say two, may live in that same house, but, and I've seen this with some very good people, in time it gets to them. The strain, the effort they have to exercise may tell on their emotions, and they find the life of prayer and the work somehow suffers. Well, you would never find in a book, but let me tell you, that in the Society of Jesus, the provincials, I know because this is part of my work, they have the list of incompatibles. So the provincial knows there are certain people in the larger the province. Before we divided, we had about 900 in the Chicago province. Well, with so many people, you can put all sorts of incompatibles in the same house. The idea was, as far as possible, not to require that these people live together. Makes sense. Notice I am assuming honest effort, prayer, and the work of grace. Superiors have a responsibility. And this is where, without going around telling tales, it is well that superiors know when two people are either naturally so strongly inclined that what may begin as a supernatural or spiritual friendship can degenerate. And by the way, those seven are in descending order, from supernatural down to sexual. Let me tell you, as a priest, there is no friendship so supernatural that, unless carefully watched, cannot descend and decline even to the lowest sensual and sexual relationship. We are human beings. And conversely, superiors have a duty. And I would say, in the early years, well, this can be pointed out to the person. I notice, sister, that you tend to spend more time with so-and-so. I've watched and I see that you are extra friendly with such-and-such. Or in reverse, I've watched you for the past week and I haven't seen you talking once to so-and-so. It may be a coincidence. It may be something that needs attention. In other words, I think each person should know enough about him or herself. And this is where those who are training others have a duty to point out. You have a weakness here. You have to master it. Let me go on a little further. Over the years, in dealing with souls, I found out that not infrequently, persons who depend on others for direction. Unless they are, I don't say, weaned from that dependence, because there is a sense in which those who are under obedience better remain under obedience. So that kind of dependence is part of our supernatural, consecrated life. But, and this I hope I'll be clear, this is one thing that especially in what I would call good communities needs to be specially attended to. Why? Because in those that have secularized or who tend to give their members far more freedom and cater to the individual more than they should, they won't have this problem. They'll have other problems, but not this one. Am I clear? If anything, a person who had been a religious and very dependent becomes a positive tyrant of selfishness in demanding this and demanding that. And sometimes there's such a violent reaction over having depended for so many years. When I see a Teresa Cain insulting the Vicar of Christ before the whole nation, not a young woman, and I wish she would hear this. I see a woman who has reacted to perhaps, I don't know her background, to perhaps over-dependence, over-regulation. Am I still clear? In other words, we are individuals. We are persons. And there have been institutes, in fact, the Church says so, going back to Pius XII, that superiors recognize the individuality of those under their care, and while requiring obedience, do not, so you might say, control the least detail of the lives of those subject to them. Now the person almost becomes a depersonalized mannequin.
I know, Father, I've meditated on that very much.
You think
I hope as though the pendulum, and it swung for those people, because I know when things got a little easier, we wobbled a little, but we weren't up that tight.
Well, this is where, just to know that this is something in today's convulsive church, it's a balance, and not easy to keep. We're talking now about persons who have a natural tendency to dependence. For example, mother and father so control their children that they enter the religious life and just very easy to tell them what to do. except they can't stay that way, because if they're going to be given responsibility, they can't be forever asking, what do I do next? In other words, this particular friendships is such a deep issue. And I would say, and this you would probably least expect, one area of particular friendship for those especially who are training others must be careful to prevent is a particular friendship between the person whom you are caring for and yourself. See, in a woman's community, where a girl, a delightful person, loving and lovable, in the nature of things, her mother is absent, by and large, from the community. There are a few rare cases where the mother was, say, the prioress or abbess of a community, but that's rare. The world is, say, either growing up or has grown up. So that, on the one hand, and this is in, say, an institute of perfection, on the one hand, the person must be taught obedience, must be compliant. On the other hand, is not to lose his or her individuality, sense of responsibility, and ability to think and judge for themselves. Now, with some people, I wouldn't dare say this, because the last thing they need is to have, say, their sisters become more responsible. Now, all they've got is individuality. They've lost community. Number 21, natural affections and how to deal with them. I would like to cover these areas. First, the meaning of natural affections, the kinds of natural affection, the social affections, the conditions for dealing with natural affections, and then finally some practical recommendations. First, a broad general definition. Natural affections are all those human sentiments which are distinct from the mental or cognitive experiences. They are, first of all, the broad variety of human sentiments that are distinct from mental or cognitive experiences. They pertain to the will, the desires, or our appetitive feelings. Or in one general statement, our natural affections are all our natural desires. the affections go out. And they are the opposite, therefore, of all the things that come in from the outside, either to enlighten the mind or to somehow satisfy our knowledge. The precondition for having a desire is that there's something already inside of me, which stimulates the desire. The affections, therefore, are all those tendencies to go out, to reach out, to satisfy what somehow my mind or even my body knows is worthwhile. Affections presuppose cognition. There is no desire unless there is prior knowledge. So the natural affections are all our natural urges, tendencies, impulses, reaching out to what inside of us we know we would enjoy. Now the kinds. First, broadly speaking, there are personal or individual natural affections, and there are social natural affections. In other words, there are desires we have for just personal satisfaction, and there are desires we have which reach beyond the individual in order to somehow be of service to others. And secondly, there are natural affections and supernatural affections. What's the difference? Natural affections arise from our human nature as such. A child just born has a natural desire for food. A child just born has a natural affection to be possessed. A child just born has a natural desire for company, dreads being alone. Am I correct? Whereas a supernatural affections arise from human nature, all right, but elevated by grace. So all our affections, call them desires, arise from us, from within. But where these affections are natural, they arise from human nature alone. Where they are supernatural, they arise from nature which has been raised by God's grace to have impulses and desires, general term affections, that are born of God. We have the affections, we have the desires, but if they're supernatural, we would not have them unless God's grace were there. What is our focus? It is on natural affections. And although the language may seem a little strange, but it's necessary because the two are very closely related. When we talk about dealing with natural affections, we mean dealing with natural, individual, personal affections, and dealing with what we call the natural social affections. And I suppose our English vocabulary has become so identified with desires that have to do with other people that we've almost, well, call those and those alone affections. Whereas affections are all our desires, whether they involve other people or not. We have a natural affection for food. We have a natural affection for drink. We have a natural affection for sleep. One of the difficulties in teaching Catholic theology or here Catholic spirituality in English is that the words we have in English are not really the products of a Christian society. Affectio or affectus in Latin always includes all desires, all inclinations, all urges, and not only the social ones. In any case, what would be the basic natural, individual, or personal affections? They are, first of all, the desire for survival, for remaining alive. And for that, we have a natural desire for whatever is necessary to keep us alive. The obvious means: food, shelter, clothing, rest. Secondly, we have a natural, personal, or individual affection for growth, for development. And there again, we need food, clothing, shelter. We need the means of livelihood. We need nourishment. We need whatever the human person, in order to develop himself, requires. Now, what does a human person need to grow? Even as a human person, the person needs other people.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.